The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Welcome to the Tech Meme Ride Home for Tuesday, March 3rd, 2020. I'm Brian McCullough. Today, Waymo has an interesting raise, interesting for what it says about self-driving and Google moonshots. Robinhood has the worst possible outages at the worst possible time, a new player in the quantum computing race, and sports tech offers a new way to watch golf. Here's what you missed today in the world of tech. Waymo just announced a huge investment round, $2.25 billion coming from Silver Lake, Andreessen Horowitz, parent company Alphabet, and others including AutoNation and the Sovereign Wealth Fund of Abu Dhabi. This is Waymo's first ever outside raise. If you listen to this show regularly, though, maybe you shouldn't be surprised that it's happening, quoting VentureBeat. The news comes after a report by The Information revealed that Waymo nearly doubled its headcount to 1,500 employees, known as Waymonauts, from 800 about a year ago. The company's annual cost is estimated to be around $1 billion, while its robo-taxi business, Waymo One, reportedly yields just hundreds of thousands of dollars a year in revenue. Waymo hasn't shared the number of customers who have ridden in its fleet of over 600 vehicles to date, but it said last December that over 1,500 people are using its ride-hailing service monthly and that it has served over 100,000 total rides since launching its rider program in 2017. Waymo is the proven leader in self-driving technology, is the only autonomous vehicle company with a public ride-hailing service, and is successfully scaling its fully driverless experience, said Silver Lake co-CEO Egon Durban in a statement. Quote, "We're deeply aligned with Waymo's commitment to making our roads safer and look forward to working together to help advance and scale the Waymo driver in the U.S. and beyond," end quote. So I said, this probably isn't surprising given all of that news of the recent hires and the $1 billion it costs Alphabet to run Waymo at this point. But it's still eyebrow-raising nonetheless. As AI guru Callum Chase tweeted, this indicates that self-driving is harder to perfect than people thought. It also shows that Silicon Valley's smartest investors still think the question regarding autos is when, not if, and that the answer is years, not decades, end quote. But also, this is twofold interesting from a Google perspective. Again, this is the first time Waymo has raised money that didn't come solely from Alphabet. As Eric Johnsa tweeted, in case there were any doubts about Alphabet doubling down on Waymo, they just disappeared. But it's notable that no automakers appear to be involved in this funding round, end quote. I'd say this is also notable too, quoting Steve Kovach. This massive outside investment is a signal Alphabet's other bets need much more money than Alphabet itself is willing to invest. Verily raised an external $1 billion round last year, end quote. Yesterday, on a day when the stock market soared back up around $1.1 trillion in overall market wealth, stock trading app Robinhood suffered what it described as a system-wide outage that affected all functionalities on the platform. By all functionalities, we mean the company's app, website, even the help center. So if you were a Robinhood customer yesterday, you potentially missed out on that huge market rally and thus missed out on maybe a lot of money. Robinhood was down starting at 6:30 a.m. Pacific time on Monday, and it only came back online at 11 p.m. Pacific time last night, so they basically missed an entire trading day. The company said it would be offering billing credits or other forms of compensation, though it stressed that no customer data was lost. But at the time of this writing, Robinhood just confirmed that it is down again shortly after the Fed announced its big rate cut. This is basically the worst possible thing that can happen to a company like Robinhood. Like the inability to trade, especially on important market-moving days like yesterday and today, is potentially fatal to a stock trading platform. Either you'll lose customers to rivals, Quoting Bloomberg, recently, much larger competitors, including Charles Schwab and Fidelity Investments, have dropped some trading fees, essentially matching Robinhood's offering. Companies including Jack Dorsey's Square have also started offering the ability to trade stocks for free, end quote. Or you could be on the hook for potentially ruinous litigation. Quoting Drew Olenoff on Twitter, the class action lawsuit is going to be gnarly, end quote. If you'll recall, this is not the first snafu Robinhood has had in recent years. There was that whole high-interest yielding account that maybe wasn't legally kosher with financial regulators. I think I said at the time, you can't move fast and break things in the financial space. You just can't. Quoting Bloomberg one more time. Financial technology companies may have difficulty dealing with higher trading volume in more volatile markets, said Craig Perrong, professor of finance at the University of Houston. Quote, particularly, is the technology scalable enough to handle the amount of orders they're getting, he said, end quote. Yes, this falls into the you had one job category, and neither customers nor courts tend to be very forgiving if you can't do the one thing you absolutely had to be trusted to do above all others. Today, I learned that there is another major player in the quantum computer race alongside IBM and Google. Honeywell, today, said it would launch a quantum computer within 3 months with a quantum volume of at least 64, making it the world's most powerful quantum computer. Also, Honeywell says it will increase quantum volume tenfold in the next 5 years, quoting ZDNet. Quantum volume is a measurement to gauge the power of a quantum computer and account for errors, device crosstalk, connectivity, and compiler efficiency. Quantum volume is different than quantum supremacy, which is the goal of demonstrating that a quantum computer can solve problems classical computers can't. Honeywell's quantum volume of 64 is twice what is offered by IBM's Q system fleet. Under Honeywell's quantum plans, customers will connect directly to systems housed by the company. Honeywell will use quantum computing to solve issues for its key verticals, such as oil and gas and industrials, and also has a partnership with Microsoft Azure. In addition, Honeywell said it is investing in two quantum computing software providers and partnering with JPMorgan Chase to develop quantum computing algorithms for financial services. Honeywell Ventures invested in Cambridge Quantum Computing and Zapata Computing. Both companies have expertise in cross-vertical algorithms and software. Cambridge Quantum Computing focuses on chemistry, machine learning, and augmented cybersecurity, while Zapata invents algorithms and builds quantum software to take on supercomputers, end quote. 10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? How about your customer base? How about your business on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow, whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Was just checking in on our Shopify store this morning, running flawlessly as it's done for nearly a decade now. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ride, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ride now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/ride. What do you call an endpoint security product that works perfectly but makes users miserable? You call it a failure. The old approach to endpoint security is to lock down employee devices and roll out changes through forced restarts, but it just doesn't work. IT is miserable because they've got a mountain of support tickets, employees start using personal devices just to get their work done, and executives opt out the first time it makes them late for a meeting. You can't have a successful security implementation unless you work with end users. That's where Collide comes in. Their user-first device trust solution notifies users as soon as it detects an issue in their device and teaches them how to solve it without needing help from IT. That way, untrusted devices are blocked from authenticating, but users don't stay blocked. Collide is designed for companies with Okta, and it works on macOS, Windows, Linux, and mobile devices. So if you have Okta and you're looking for a device trust solution that respects your team, visit collide.com/ride to watch a demo and see how it works. That's KOLIDE.com/ride. And maybe I'm dumb for not knowing about them previously, but today I also learned that Ampere is vying to be a major new player in the chip space. Staying on the hardware beat for just a minute longer, Ampere has unveiled the Ampere Ultra, an 80-core ARM-based 64-bit server processor for applications like data analytics, AI, databases, storage, and more. This is the first ever 80-core ARM-based server processor, and it runs on 210 watts, quoting VentureBeat. Intel dominates about 95.5% of the server chip market with its x86-based processors, and AMD has the rest, but Ampere is targeting power-efficient, high-performance, and high-memory capacity features. Rene James, former president of Intel and CEO of Ampere, said in an interview with VentureBeat that the chip is faster than a 64-core AMD EPYC processor and Intel's 28-core high-end Xeon Cascade Lake chip. Quote, "We've got the most cores in the market. It's now in the hands of some of the industry's largest cloud providers," James said. "We are very happy where this came out. I think people will be surprised. There is always something that comes next. And if it doesn't come from the incumbent, it comes from the disruptor. It's exciting to be working on what I think is next," end quote. Santa Clara, California-based Ampere is backed by private equity investment firm The Carlyle Group. James hopes to take on Intel with the ARM architecture used in the world's smartphones, which is known for its efficiency in providing performance at very low power levels. Ampere was built from the ashes of Applied Microcircuits, end quote. Once again, I have held out as long as I could on the COVID news of the day. I'm not denying that it is the biggest story of the day almost every day, but I'm trying not to make it always be the leadoff story to avoid repetition, I guess. Today in COVID-19 tech news, Facebook and Twitter have pulled out of the South by Southwest conference citing COVID-19 concerns. South by Southwest organizers say the conference is proceeding as planned, but come on, realistically, how much longer can we expect that to be true? Next, some good news. iPhone maker Foxconn says it expects Chinese plants to begin operating normally by the end of March after the disruption caused by the coronavirus. Quoting Bloomberg, Foxconn parent Honhai said Tuesday its factories are now operating at about 50% of seasonal capacity, but that should ramp up over the course of the month as workers stream back into its plants. Still, Chairman Yong Liu warned it remained difficult to quantify the full impact of a weeks-long disruption or gauge the effects on final demand for the swath of consumer electronics it makes, from laptops to game consoles. Business across all of Honhai's four major divisions should decline in the March quarter compared with the previous year, meaning sales in the first half could end up being flat, Liu told investors and reporters on a conference call. Quote, "There's not a huge hit on demand yet so far, but I dare not and don't want to predict the outlook of the outbreak," Liu said. "We don't see a huge issue with our suppliers, and we are helping them to secure resources," end quote. And the Wall Street Journal had an interesting report that some inside Apple in recent years urged the company to relocate part of its manufacturing systems from China to other countries like Vietnam, but the suggestions were shot down by senior management, quoting from the piece. Some operations executives suggested as early as 2015 that the company relocate assembly of at least one product to Vietnam. That would allow Apple to begin the multi-year process of training workers and creating a new cluster of component providers outside the world's most populous nation, people familiar with the discussions said. Senior managers rebuffed the idea. For Apple, weaning itself off China, its second largest consumer market and the place where most of its products are assembled, has been too challenging to undertake. Apple's reliance on China has long frustrated staff and more recently unnerved investors. The coronavirus represents Apple's third major setback there in as many years, including the fallout from tensions with the U.S. that included tariffs and slower than expected iPhone sales in the country, end quote. And finally, back to a bit of good news, if true. Alibaba says its new AI system can detect coronavirus in seconds, quoting The Next Web. Per a report from Nikkei's Asian Review, Alibaba claims its new system can detect coronavirus in CT scans of patients' chests with 96% accuracy against viral pneumonia cases. And it only takes 20 seconds for the AI to make a determination. According to the report, humans generally take about 15 minutes to diagnose the illness, as there can be upwards of 300 images to evaluate. The system was trained on images and data from 5,000 confirmed coronavirus cases and has already been tested in hospitals throughout China. According to the review's report, at least 100 healthcare facilities are currently employing Alibaba's AI, end quote. Finally today, remember when we did that weekend bonus episode about sports tech and we talked about how streaming is going to change how sports are consumed by viewers? Well, this is what we were talking about. NBC has an experimental live stream of the upcoming PGA Tour that will make it easier for you to follow your favorite golfer or just any golfer you want. It's called PGA Tour Live through NBC Sports Gold. And if you tune in through that app for the upcoming broadcast of the Players Championship, you can switch between any one of the 120 cameras installed on the course, and you can switch in real time. The Verge makes the excellent point that this is taking a page from video game streaming. Quote, if you've ever watched a golf broadcast, you know that they're usually forced to focus on one player at a time. Part of that comes down to matching the slower pace of golf as a sport, but it's also a well-disguised technical limitation. With only a few cameras on a multi-acre course, networks have had to be incredibly judicious about who's on the screen and, crucially, when they're on the screen. Typically, cameras stick closely to popular players or those who are about to gain or possibly blow the lead or those who are about to take a challenging shot. This leaves every other player, many of whom are incredibly talented, off-screen for quite some time. Unlike basketball or football, having 120 cameras on the golf course isn't going to add exciting or previously unseen angles to the match, but what they contribute to the game of golf is similar to the spectator modes in some video games that let you follow each player's perspective while watching an esport event or when you're just playing an online match yourself. Having the option to watch each player lets you see the game unfold through a different lens, and that's valuable if you want the full picture. For instance, there are 100 players in a Fortnite match, so it's a lot easier to follow your favorite player when you can see things from their perspective, end quote. Yeah, actually, I would argue that for football and basketball especially, having a ton of extra camera angles is actually overkill. Those are sports where you want to go where the action is, which is generally where the ball is. I mean, yeah, extra camera angles are useful for getting different views of the action as it happens, but there's no point in, say, following the guy all the way on the other side of the field on a kickoff return. But this is what we were talking about when we were talking about this stuff on that weekend episode. Golf, if you think about it, golf has always been the worst spectator sport. Like the worst to watch in person, for sure. You have to walk from hole to hole and let the players go by you in a parade, never seeing the tee shot that got the ball to the green if that's where you're standing. And it's only marginally better on TV, where the directors of the television coverage often have to rush back and forth to cover action as it occurs or even back up and cover action that's already happened. So how would it transform the experience of viewing the sport if viewers actually had control of that? If instead of being a spectator sport, golf was actually sort of an active event? I guess what I'm suggesting here is, weirdly, what if golf is the sport that is the most like Fortnite? I have never played a Zelda game before in my life, and I actually only bought Zelda when I got the Switch because I thought it would be good for my kids. And we are still playing it all together, but I kind of wish I had started it on my own because I am suddenly obsessed with this game. I know I'm about 2 years late on this, but how good is Breath of the Wild? I can see why some people think this is the best video game ever made, possibly. I certainly am starting to think so. Talk to you tomorrow.